Hebrews chapter 11. It's a big chapter, but we're not going to look at all of it, of course. But we're going to be looking at some things that I think can be of help and encouragement to us. Hebrews chapter 11. If you know anything about Hebrews chapter 11, you will immediately remember that Hebrews chapter 11 is the faith chapter of the Bible. It's all about faith from beginning to end. It's all about faith. And we ask ourselves an important question. What is faith? You ever thought about that? You know, we have general ideas of what faith is, but what is faith? And make it more specific, what is faith in God? I mean, you may have faith in your chair that it holds you up this morning. That's a form of faith. But what is faith in God? And then, as you think about that, how much faith do you have? Do you have a lot of faith? A little faith? Do you need faith? You know, that's another question as well is, you know, how much faith do we need? You know, these are questions that we really need answers for. Because they're important to us. And though we may not focus a lot on them, though we may not think about it a lot, these are important questions to answer. What is faith? How much faith do I have? How much faith do I need? And these are things that, when you look in the Scriptures, you know, we face issues with faith all of the time. Studying here in Hebrews chapter 12 or 11, this faith chapter of the Bible, it's a key chapter of the Bible to dig into if you are studying faith. Because it goes through and talks about many, many people who had faith. Starts out in verse number 1. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Verse 3, he talks about we have faith that the worlds were created by God. Verse 4, Abel had faith. Verse 5, Enoch had faith. Verse 7, Noah had faith. And verse 8, Abraham had faith. And, you know, you go down through the whole chapter and there's one after another of men and women who were marked by God for their faith. You know, the thing that's important for us to see here, too, is that it isn't just Paul saying these are people that had faith. God inspired the Scriptures. God chose to write down that Noah had faith. God chose to write down that some of these others had faith and they were people of faith. I wonder if we would have lived back in those days, would have God felt comfortable putting my name in there or your name in that list? So these were people that had faith in God. You know, the Bible characters that he mentions here are no real surprise to us. If you know much of your Bible, you read about Abel. What do we know about Abel? Well, he was the son of Adam and Eve. He was the son who walked with God. He did what was right. He obeyed God. He trusted God. He made the sacrifice that God asked him to do. His brother didn't, and as a result, his brother ended up killing him. But Abel had faith. We see also that Noah had faith. Now, you stop and think about Noah's life. You'd have to have faith to believe that God was going to do something he'd never done before. It had never rained. And God said, Noah, I want you to build a huge boat. They weren't anywhere near the water. And he's building this gigantic boat. And it took him a long, 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 long time, scores of years, to build that boat. And to waterproof it. And to put food in it for all the animals. And then God brought in the animals. And then God shut the door. There was a lot of faith involved in Noah's life. So we're not surprised that Noah's in that list. A man of faith. Abraham, another man of faith. God said, Abraham, I want you to leave Ur of the Chaldees, way over there by the Euphrates River. I want you to go all the way over to the land of Canaan, and I've got a plan for you. God didn't tell him where exactly he was going, just said, I want you to head that direction. And he sent him on his way. And he was a man of faith that trusted God to take him where he didn't know for sure where God was going to lead him. And all through Abraham's life. And Abraham becomes the leader of the nation of Israel. And all the things and trials. Now, Abraham was no perfect guy. I mean, he lied twice about his wife. Got himself in all kinds of trouble. And, you know, so he wasn't perfect, but he's a man of faith. And we see another one that doesn't surprise us. Joseph. Now, there's a guy that's one of our heroes. Joseph was a man who was hated by his brothers because he was dad's favorite. Now, that wasn't a very good thing for his dad to have favorites in the family, and it caused a lot of problems, and it Joseph was also set up as the next leader of the family. Remember, Jacob, his dad, had four wives. Two of them were legitimate wives. Well, I guess they were all legitimate, but the first two were his genuine wives, and the other two were concubine-type wives. But he had four wives altogether. So Leah was his first wife, but it wasn't the one he was planning to marry, but he got tricked into marrying her. And then Rachel was the one he really wanted to marry. Well, Reuben was the firstborn of Leah, and he messed up and was an ungodly man. And as a result, Jacob said, "You're not going to get the blessing of the family because you messed things up." And who's next? Well, the next one in line is the firstborn of his other wife, which was Joseph. And his other brothers hated him because Joseph's quite a bit younger. And he's got all these other brothers. And he's the one that's kind of put up and set up as the leader of the family. He wore that special coat that probably indicated the leadership of the family. He was also kind of pampered in the sense that dad didn't make him go out and do all the hard work. He was teaching him and training him. You think about it. How did Joseph get all this spiritual understanding and wisdom that he had, and his other brothers seemed to have lacked it? Well, dad spent a lot of time teaching him some things. And grandpa must have too. And so there was teaching and training. But as a result, he was a man of faith. He gets sold by his brothers into slavery, spends years in prison and in slavery, and then God brings him to the top. He becomes the prime minister of Egypt. And he was just a great man of faith in many, many ways. Joseph, a great hero. Then there's Moses. Moses, the hero of Israel. I mean, next to Abraham, I don't know what the Jews would put Abraham or Moses. Moses was really a hero of theirs. He was the leader of the nation. He led them out of captivity in Egypt. And he was a great man of leadership. And at 120 years old when he died, he had led the people of Israel for 80 years. And God greatly blessed him. He was a great man of faith. And then David. David's another man. Now, no perfect man, of course. He'd messed up in a lot of ways, but he was a man after God's own heart. He was a man of faith. He had a vision to build the temple. You know, we often call the temple Solomon's temple. You know, there's a lot of ways it was David's temple. David had collected almost all the materials for the temple and had it all prepared. David had the blueprints all drawn up. Solomon just implemented it, and he got the credit for it. But David was a man after God's own heart. He was a man of faith. So we're not surprised to see them, their names in there. But, you know, you read names like Sarah and Jacob and Barak and Samson, and you think, why were they in there? Sarah? I mean, remember Sarah when God came to down in Genesis chapter 17 and 18 there, and he says, Sarah's going to have a son, and Sarah goes, not a chance. Not me. I'm an old woman. No way in the world am I going to have a baby. And God says, Sarah was laughing. She said, I didn't laugh. And God says, you did too laugh. And yet God saw in her something that we can't see on the surface. God said there's faith inside her. And she believed God. You think of Jacob, the deceiver, tricking his dad, tricking his brother, stealing his brother's birthright, and running off, and then he goes through all kinds of heartaches and problems. Kind of God's kind of giving him what he roused up anyway. He ends up with four wives instead of the one that he really wanted. And just a mess of his life. And yet God looked down at Jacob and said, there's a man of faith. I look at Jacob's life. I could think of a lot of other things to say about Jacob, but I wouldn't think of faith. But God did. And then there was Barak. Some of you don't even know who Barak was. Barak was a man who became a military leader of Israel. But Deborah the prophet, the nation had fallen into such decay that the men weren't even leading in the spiritual realms. And there was a prophetess, a woman named Deborah. And she comes along and says, Barak, God wants you to lead the army. And he says, me? Not a chance. I'm not going to do that. Not unless you go with me. She says, okay, I'll go hold your hand and we'll win the battle. And that's kind of the way it was. But God calls him a man of faith. I would have called him you know, well, I shouldn't call him a coward because I probably would have felt the same way. But yeah, he wasn't a real brave man in a lot of ways. Wouldn't have thought of saying he was a man of faith, but God saw him at that. And so God has these men. And then another one, Samson. Now, when you think of Samson, does the first thing that comes to your mind is a man of faith? No, usually it's a strong man with a weak will, weak character. He had lots of strength, but he didn't have much character. He was always falling into some kind of sinful trap. And yet God looked down at Samson and said, Samson was a man of faith. And he put him in this list. And I'm thinking, I wouldn't have thought of those people as people of faith. But you know, that gives us some encouragement because it helps us to see that God sees below the surface. God knows our hearts. And God may be looking down in our congregation this morning and say, you know, there is a man or a woman of great faith. And if I was writing this chapter again, God might say, you know, if I was rewriting Hebrews 11, I'd add their name in there. What an honor that would be. To have God say you were a person of faith that He could put in His list of heroes of the faith. But another group that we see listed in this list that really surprises me is the nation of Israel. The children of Israel. Look down with me in verse 29. That's the verse we're going to focus our attention on today. Verse number 29. By faith, they, speaking of the children of Israel, passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians, are saying to do, were drowned. God honors the Israelites for their faith in crossing the Red Sea. Now you need to stop and think about that. When I read that the other day, I thought, that's strange. Faith in crossing the Red Sea. And my mind went back to the events that led up to that. Moses had just led Israel out of the Egyptian captivity. They were fleeing from the Egyptians. And they were fleeing toward the Promised Land. In order to spare them of the troubles and heartaches of an immediate battle with the enemy, God led them on a detour. They could have traveled straight from where they were in Goshen right up to Israel. It's only about an 11-day journey instead of all the years and years they wandered through the wilderness. But God led them on that way because He didn't want them to see war right away. If they would have gone straight up there, they would have immediately found war and the people would have panicked. And remember, they were slaves. They've been slaves all their lives. For 400 years, the nation had been in slavery. That's all they ever knew. Slaves aren't real good at fighting. They're not they're not soldiers. They're slaves. And God said, I don't want them to face slavery or face war right away, so I'm going to lead them a detour away. But they were going through this trial, and as they were traveling through the wilderness, headed for toward the Red Sea. And there's lots of debates, and you can read up on articles as to where they crossed the Red Sea. One thing I'll tell you right now, that those who claim that they crossed this little patch of reedy swamp near Egypt, rubbish. That's not what happened. That's not where they crossed the Red Sea. Because God said He pushed the waves back, and they crossed on dry land, and the waves came in. It wasn't just knee-deep water that came washing in and scared the Egyptians, and they all died of shock. You know, that's another way it was. It was a massive portion of the river. I personally believe that they crossed on the other side of the Sinai Peninsula that comes down there, and there's two places that they call Mount Sinai. There's debates over that. One's on that peninsula. The other one's actually on the other side of the fork that comes up in the rivers. And as we studied through this a few years ago in Bible study on Wednesday nights, we found that there's a place over there that many people believe is where they crossed. The Red Sea is very deep in that area. Very deep gorge that goes down. It's deep, deep water. But there's one spot that has a land bridge across it. Just under the water. Not just a few feet, but it's not very deep there. And it's a bridge that goes all the way across. Like somebody built a bridge all the way across this chasm. And it's believed that that's where they may have crossed. But they came down to that water. Why God led them that way, we know, but they didn't know. Why were they going that direction? Why go down by the water? Maybe they wanted to see the water. Who knows? But they got in, there's mountains on both sides. They're in a valley. They get to the edge of the Red Sea, and they camped there. And you can just imagine, some of them probably sent out scouts just to keep an eye on things, make sure no enemy's approaching. And the scouts come running back in and says, "We've got trouble. We've seen the Egyptian army and they're coming after us." And before long, there's the dust flying in the air and the people can see the dust. And what do the people do? They all fall on their knees and they pray and say, "God, we're so grateful for your goodness to us. We know you're going to protect us." No. They panicked. Just like most people would do. We're in big trouble now. And I want us to go back to Exodus. Put your finger in your Bible or a marker in your Bible. Now turn back to the second book of the Bible, Exodus. Genesis, Exodus, and go to chapter 14. Exodus chapter 14. I want us to read the account there in Exodus chapter 14, just so we can see what actually took place there. Beginning with verse number 10. Exodus chapter 14, verse number 10. "And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. And they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried unto the Lord." They're terrified. They're scared out of their wits. The Egyptians are coming after them. Remember, they had just fled Egypt. The Egyptians had lost everything. God had sent all these plagues and wiped out Egypt. And the last one killed all the firstborn. The Egyptians are furious. Everything's going wrong. And now they're coming after them. And the children of Israel said, "We're dead now. It's hopeless now. We're in big trouble." And so they're terrified by what they see. Verse number 11. "And they said unto Moses, because there was no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt?" So now they're saying, "Why did we leave? We should have stayed back in Egypt. You brought us out here, now we're going to die out here. And we should have stayed back there in Egypt." And verse 12, "Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness." This doesn't sound like people of faith. This sounds like people who are scared out of their wits. They're terrified. The people are panicking. "We're going to die now. We're runaway slaves. They know it. They're catching up on us. And they're going to destroy us and wipe us out and drag us back and torture us and put us back into slavery. It's going to be terrible. If we even live through this, it's going to be terrible." They're panicking. And yet God just told us there in Hebrews that these were people of faith. I don't see much faith there. But God saw something that I don't see. We see that they were sore afraid. Feared death. I mean, nobody's anxious to die. These people were terrified. They were afraid of that they were going to die. And they were angry as Moses. Poor Moses. You know, you think about this man. How would you like to be in Moses' shoes? Every time something went wrong, they attacked Moses. "It's all your fault. We should kill you and go back to Egypt." Well, it's all your fault. They're always mad at Moses. All through those 40 years, you see it again and again and again. They're mad at Moses. And then in reality, God says, "They're not mad at you. They're mad at me." And God pours out his judgment on them again and again. Because these were people who didn't trust God. And they took it out on Moses. And they wished that they had remained there in Egypt. They said, we would have been better off being slaves. Now remember, that's why God sent Moses to begin with, to take them out. Because remember there in the first few chapters of Exodus, he says, "I see the distress of the people. They're being tormented by the Egyptians. The Egyptians are making life miserable for them. They're slaves. They have no freedom. It's a terrible life for them. My heart goes out to them. I'm going to rescue them." And so they were struggling there, and yet God had mercy upon them. And now they say, "We'd be better off going back and being slaves." They saw slavery better than death in the wilderness. You know, the bottom line is, they were terrified. They were so scared. You ever been scared like that? I'm so afraid that you just couldn't think straight. This is the way they were. They were very, very, very scared. They were afraid. They were panicking. It'd be like you know, if you lived out like where Hogan and Charity live, and the bushfires are raging and they're coming right toward your house, and there's nothing you can do about it but get your garden hose out and spray a sprinkle on stuff to keep it cool and wait for everything to burn down and you with it. I mean, that's the fear that's in them. The enemy's coming. It's going to destroy them. They're going to be gone. There's nothing they can do. And they were absolutely terrified. During trials, often we do not think rationally. And that's what was happening to them. You know, you stop and think about it. When you've been in times of trials, all of us go through trials. Troubles, problems, heartaches, trials. How do we respond? Honestly, it's not easy to respond in a right way. I remember one day, a few weeks ago, we were in a place called Eau Claire, Wisconsin. We stayed there for a couple of days between meetings. And we went out to the car, got in the car to take off to the next location. And as soon as I start the car up, there's a light that came on the dashboard that says, flat tire. I thought, oh glory. It's on a Saturday. Places are closed. Flat tire. I wish I could have said, what a wonderful opportunity for us to pray. Let's have a prayer meeting. You know, instead of going, oh no, what are we going to do? Got a flat tire. You know, we've been through those times, and it's not easy to deal with those kind of things. But you know, even in that situation, I won't leave you hanging. God was so good to us. Found a petrol station, tried to pump it up, and their pump was worthless. It didn't work at all. And so it still stayed flat. And I saw another station offer, and I asked somebody, and they said, well, you can try over here. It was some place that did some other kind of work, but they might be able to fix it. So I went over there, and the guy said, sure, I'll pump it up for you. And he got his hose out and pumped the thing back up, and back up, and it was fine. And I thought, well, I don't hear any air squirting out. I don't see any nails sticking out. Maybe it'll be okay. It lasted that way for over a week and a half. And then went down again. I pumped it back up and went down a little bit again a few more days. Pumped it back up. We made it back home that way. Come find out it had two nails in it. We didn't know. But God took care of us. Met the need. But you know, when we have those situations that come up, the first thought that comes to our mind isn't always the right thought. We don't think rationally. And these people had no faith in God's protection. Now, what had God done for them? They had just gone through the 10 plagues of Egypt. The blood, the frogs, the lice, the flies, the murrain, the boils, the hail, the locusts, the darkness, and the firstborn. I mean, they'd just been through those 10 plagues. They saw God do miracles. One right after another. And protecting them. And caring for them. And meeting their needs and destroying the nation of Israel. Or the nation of Egypt. And yet, trial comes up. And don't think about God's protection. They forgot about those plagues. God had protected them. God had kept them. God had met the needs. Destroyed the nation of Israel. And you know, many times, we don't think rational thoughts either when we go through trials. We need to stop and think and remember the great and mighty power of God. Remember the times that God has met our needs. It does us good to think back and say, God was good to us. He met our needs in that situation. He met our needs in this situation. And when that problem came up, He worked it out. And when this thing came up, yes, God solved that and helped us through that and provided for that. God is able to do all things. And God is a good God. And we need to remember the good things God has done in the past to encourage our hearts so that we can have faith. And I'm preaching to myself too. You know, when that tire went flat that morning, I needed to think. You know, but God was good to me. He gave me a wonderful wife. And she said, you know, it'll be okay. We just need to pray. I thought, you know, I need to have more faith like that. And God did meet the need, and God did take care. Boy, that's what we need. We need to look back and think of how good our God is and remember those good things God does for us. But then we read on in verse 14. 13 to 14, and Moses said unto the people, "Fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show unto you this day. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. The Lord will shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace." Now, when you read something like that, what does it do for you? The first thing it does to me is this. I think, where did Moses get that information? I mean, it doesn't tell us. It just leaves us hanging. Where did Moses get that information? Obviously, he'd been talking to God. He saw the dust coming up too. And instead of panicking like the people, Moses must have gone aside and got a hold of God and spent time with God. And God assured him. Now, I know that he lived in a different era than we do it, and he had a communion with God like nobody else that we know of that could actually talk with God and get the information straight from God. We've got the scriptures. We can go to the Bible. The Bible will guide us and direct us. Moses was able to talk right to God and knew God face to face, unlike any other person had ever done. But Moses must have spent time with God. And he had God's words, and he said, God is going to take care of us. And he believed in all of his heart despite the circumstances. Now he could see the dust coming up too. He knew the armies were coming too. He knew that there was mountains on the two sides and the water in front of them. He knew they were trapped. He knew there was no way they could escape. He knew that it would take a miracle to get out of this alive. He knew that. But he still trusted God. Because God said, Moses, it's going to be okay. You won't see these Egyptians again. And Moses believed God. Moses was a man of faith. He truly was a man of faith. Back to Hebrews just for a moment. If you want to flip back there with me. I want us to notice here in verses 20, same chapter, verse 24. It says, "By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter." Now, what's it talking about? Remember, he was raised by Pharaoh's daughter. When he was a little baby, mom put him in the water in a little boat in the bulrushes, and Pharaoh's daughter found him and took him home and called him her son. So Moses is raised in the palace. He is the son, adopted son of the princess. Very likely being trained and prepared to be the next Pharaoh. Moses had all the best of the training, best of everything. He lived in luxury all of his life. He had everything that heart could desire. But he says here that by faith, when he was come to years, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He says, "Nope, this isn't for me. I'm an Israelite. I'm not going to live here in the palace in luxury. I'm an Israelite. Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season." He said, "I'm going to go be with my people. They're slaves, they're suffering, and I'd be better off suffering with them than enjoying the pleasures that I am living in for a season. It's not going to last." And Moses, by faith, stepped out. Verse 26, "Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of the in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward." It says there he looked to the future and said, "I'd be better off serving God instead of serving the king, instead of being the next Pharaoh, instead of living in luxury, I'd be better off serving my God, and the rewards that will be eternal are far better than whatever I'd get here in this life." You know, what a difference that would make in our lives if we would do that. If we just say, listen, life isn't about me. Life isn't about getting money. Life isn't about getting a name. It isn't about having some fancy job. It isn't about having a great big house and three cars and two boats and all that comes along with life. It's not about that. It's about eternity. And I want to live for eternity. And Moses was one of the men. He said, "I'm going to live for eternity and leave all this that I have now, all the pleasures of sin that I have now, turn my back on that, and I'm going to live for God. And I know there's going to be a reward in the end. And that's what I'm living for. God's reward, not man's reward. Folks, there's a lot for us to learn there. We would be much benefited if we would follow Moses' example in that and let God have His way in our lives. Moses didn't panic. And he urged the people, because he was a man of faith, he urged the people to believe God. He said, folks, you need to believe God. It's going to be okay. Back there again in Exodus, we see there in verse 21 that he encouraged the people. Verse number 21, and Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. All right, so let me back up to verse 15 again. And the Lord said unto Moses, wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the people, children of Israel, that they go forward. Lift up your rod and stretch thine hand over the Red Sea and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. So God gave Moses specific instructions, and we need to be like Moses. We need to encourage others by our faith. You know, people around us need to see Christians that have genuine faith in God. You know, when they look at your life, what do they see? When they look at my life, what do they see? Do they see genuine faith in God that they can look at and be encouraged by and be built up by? Or do they see, you know, we're kind of just as scared and terrified and shaky as everybody else in the whole world? God wants us to have faith in Him. Moses was that kind of man. And now God tells him, Moses, I want you to lead these people across this water. In verse number 21, and Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on the right hand and on their left. Now, God caused a strong east wind, and it divided the waters. Obviously, there was a miracle involved here as well. I mean, it wasn't just a lot of wind that caused the water to divide in the center, because the waters were divided. It wasn't just pushed all to one side. So a wind coming from one direction doesn't blow all the water. I mean, you could blow it all over in a pile over here, I suppose, if you had it strong enough, but there's not a wall on both sides. So there was a miracle involved here. God caused there to be a miracle. There was a lot of wind. Can you imagine now? It's nighttime. It's dark outside. The wind is blowing like you've never seen it blow before. And the water opens up in front of you. And it's, God says, all right, now walk across it. I don't think very many of us would say, I'll be first. This was a terrifying time. And yet God was providing for them. And He said, I want you to lead them across this water. The waters divided, and the sea before them became dry. So they had a dry walk to go across. And again, if it was this place I described earlier, there's a land bridge across it. Instead of going way, 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 way down in the valley, way, way, way up on the other side, they would have had a walk across on this land bridge that God opened up by the waves of the sea pushed to the sides. But however it was, they made it to the other side. But they had to walk across in faith. You know, watching God do this must have increased their faith. Remember back there in Hebrews, God said the children of Israel had faith, and God wrote it down as an exceptional example of faith, and He put it in the faith chapter for us to say they had faith. So these were people that were scared out of their wits, doubting God, saying we should have stayed in Egypt, we should have been back there being slaves instead of out here dying in the wilderness. And now God gives them faith. I believe that they saw God bring that strong wind. They saw before their eyes the water just opened up in front of them. They saw that. They saw the walls of water on the sides. Often wonder whether they could see the fish in there like an aquarium. I don't know. But they saw the waters pushed up to the sides. The land before them was dry. I mean, that doesn't happen instantly without a miracle. And if we had a dry summer and some of the lakes dry up, sometimes the little lake down by Joondalup, you know, almost goes dry in the dead of summer. But I guarantee you walk out in the middle of that thing and you get stuck in the mud. because it's not dry ground. I mean, it would have to be a long, long time to dry out so much that you could dry, walk across and say, this is dry ground. But these people, God just did it instantly, divided the sea, the land was dry, they walked across on dry land. Evidently, seeing this happen gave them faith. But it must have been a terrifying journey even going across that. You think about that. We know the story, we've heard it many times, but just think about the walls of water may have gone up very high on the sides. And they're walking across. Water piled up on the sides, miraculously held there by God in this strong wind. And they're supposed to walk across on the dry land until we get to the other side. It was a long way across. It had to have been a long way across because the entire army of Egypt got in the middle and God pulled the plug and it all came in on them. It had to have been a long way across. It wasn't just a half kilometer. It was a long way across. And they made it all the way across. And you read on down through the whole chapter, and we might not read the exact verse here, but it says that they walked all night long across this water. They got across, the whole nation got across before morning. And in the morning, God caused it to cave back in. God obviously saw enough faith in their actions to record it in the faith chapter. God honors even small faith. Remember the words of our Lord when He said in Matthew 17:20, if ye have faith as the grain of a mustard seed, ye shall say to this mountain, remove hence to yonder place, and it shall remove, and nothing shall be impossible to you. To move a mountain? God said He can do it. I mean, we know God is capable. He's able to just push the mountain over. If He can divide the sea and make it dry in the middle, God can do anything. That would be harder than knocking down a mountain. God can do anything. And so God says, by faith, it doesn't have to be a great faith. You know, the grain of mustard seed, one of those teeny tiny seeds, tiny, tiny little seed. God says, even that much is all you need to move mountains with God. So God's not saying, you have to have gigantic faith in me in order to please me. God said, just have faith. Just have faith. Faith in our great God. We must recall God's omnipotent abilities. You know, here they walked across, and the Egyptians, verse 23, pursued and went after them into the midst of the sea. Even all of Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, his horsemen. And it came to pass in the morning. Notice this. It had blown all night long. They'd walked across all night long. It came to pass in the morning watch, the Lord looked upon the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians, and took off the chariot wheels, and they drave them heavily, so that the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fighteth for them against the Egyptians. You can't. I mean, it's kind of comical. God has a lot of humor in the Bible. I mean, it's sad humor, but it was humorous anyway. God just took the wheels off the chariots. I mean, they're tooling along. Come on, faster, faster. We got to get across here before this caves in. All of a sudden, God says, nope, pulls their wheels off, and they're dragging on the ground. Come on, horse, move, move. The horse can't go. God took all the wheels off their chariots. And then God closed the waters in on them. And all the Egyptian army was wiped out. God took care of them. God met the needs. Verse 28, and the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the host of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. There remained not so much as one of them. But the children of Israel walked upon dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on the right hand and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. And Israel saw the great work which God did upon the Egyptians, and the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and His servant Moses. God had opened the sea for them. They, by faith, walked across in the midst of that water, got to the other side. And I'm sure there were probably some of them that were jogging. I got to get across here quick. I don't like the looks of this. This does not look good. Walls of water on the both sides. I don't know, but they all got across. The Egyptians said, if they can do it, we can do it. They followed him in, and God took all the tires off their chariots. That was the end of that story. And God showed himself great, and the Egyptians died, and Israel saw the mighty, powerful hand of God in all this. And God looked back years later, and he says, the children of Israel need to be mentioned in the book of Hebrews chapter 11, in the faith chapter. They were people of faith. I don't see much faith in those guys, but God did. They had enough faith to cross that water, and God met the needs. You know, when we recall the trials of life, the Red Sea trials of life. Some of us have been in them, some of them are in them right now. You feel like you're trapped, there's nowhere to go. Mountains on the sides, water's in front of me, the enemy's coming. We're cooked. But God knows the way out. God has a path. And he says, we need to trust him, even when we can't figure out how to get across this Red Sea. God has a path. God knows what he's doing. No matter what that trial is in your life, God has a path he wants you to follow. And he says, I just want you to trust me. Depend upon me. Rest in me. And let me lead you and guide you through the path. You know, it does us good to recall the great events of the Bible that will build our faith. You know, the flood. Yeah, I don't know about you, but there's times when Satan puts doubts in my mind, I just go back to the Bible. And one of the places I go is the flood. I thought, there's no way on earth that anybody's going to convince me that all those fossils and things were part of evolutionary process. It was a flood. Just like God described. We have a great God, a powerful God. And you look at those events in the Bible, it'll build your courage. And the 10 plagues. And then there's Hezekiah's prayer. Remember the Assyrians, was it Assyrians? Yeah, I think it was Assyrians. We're coming in to attack Israel. And the Hezekiah prayed. What happened? God sent an angel down and 185,000 soldiers died that night. God did a miracle. We can see those great things that God did. Then there's Cyrus's decree. Another amazing, amazing thing in the Bible. Hundreds of years earlier, God said there's going to be a king arise whose name is Cyrus, that one day Israel is going to be in captivity and he's going to set my people free and let them go back to homeland. None of that even happened. And years later, Cyrus, the king of Persia, said, God's spoken to my heart. Israel needs to go back. We're going to set them all free. You can go back home. Anybody that wants to, you're welcome to go back home. God did that. A miracle. You know, it's amazing. And you see those things that happen. You think about even the earthquake in Philippi. Paul and Silas are in prison in Philippi. In the dungeon. In stocks. They had just been beaten. And God sent a miracle earthquake to shift the whole prison. They're all set free. Ends up, Paul's set free. The jailer gets saved and they can leave town. God did a wonderful miracle. And you know, we've got to remember those things from the Bible. But you know, also, sometimes it's harder for us. At least I'm speaking for myself. We need to remember the times when God's helped us. When God met our needs. When God took care of flat tires for us. When God met needs and helped us in dangerous situations. When God brought us through hard trials, heartaches, sorrows. God did it before. He can do it again. And remember those times. Think back in your mind of other incidences when you've been through some hard, hard times. And your God was faithful to you and he helped you and strengthened you and you got through it. That will help you to have faith in him when you meet the next Red Sea trial in your life. It'll give you the grace you need to help you have faith. So as we wrap this up this morning, Red Sea trials are part of life. And some of us are going through some right now. If you're not, you will. We face those kind of trials all the time. Some are big, some are smaller, but we face trials in life. And when we do, we've got to learn to trust God. And God wants us to trust Him. We need to believe in His ability and trust Him to do what is best, even though we can't see the other side. Trust Him to do what is best. If we struggle to have faith in God, we need to just remember that He has a perfect plan, and it's not His fault when we have lack faith. It's our fault. We need to remember that verse over there in Philippians chapter 3 that Paul gave to us through the inspiration of the Spirit of God. Verse number 20 of Ephesians 3:20. Now unto Him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us. God says, I am able to do far more than you can even imagine. I am limitless. God can meet our needs. God doesn't always take us out of the trouble. God doesn't always keep us from trouble. But God will always help us through the trouble and get us through to the other side. May not always turn out the way we would choose it, but God knows what is best, and we need to trust Him.